What's up, everyone? Thanks for tuning in Asian Bitches Down Under, a podcast about sharing information and perspectives from the Asian diasporas in society and culture. We encourage you to subscribe to our show via Apple, Google, or Spotify. If you have enjoyed our episodes, please support us by giving us a 5-star rating and get your friends on board to listen to us. Finally, we would love you to support this podcast by donating to our Buy Me a Coffee program. Your wonderful support and donations will help us to continue creating the platform for diversity and inclusivity. Make sure you check out the episode show notes for any collaborations we're working with to promote. Thanks again, and we hope you will enjoy today's episode.
Hey y'all, this is Jessie too.
Hi, this is Helen.
I almost forgot my surname, and this is Asian Bitches Down Under. Actually, last night I went to an event, right?
Yes.
It was the launch of the Asian Standard Times, which is a new kind of platform. It's 6 months old, and they basically do short documentaries. So it's a news organization run by Asians from Asian people. You know, it's trying to be global, and they don't have any print content, so it's just all documentaries.
Digitals.
Yeah, it's all digital videos. And it was a very fancy dinner at Carly Kwong's Lucky Kwong in South Eveleigh. And you know, on these fancy launch parties, they have like your name tag cards for your placemat seats.
Yeah.
And then a white woman was sitting next to me, and she looked at me. She was like, "Your name is Jessie TV." Because like the writing,
but the font,
the font looks like you, TV instead of TU. I was like, "Yes, it actually is. My name is Jessie TV."
Seriously.
Yeah, I know. White women. Helen, how are you this week?
I don't know how to describe my life this week.
Oh, yes. Helen is in COVID lockdown because both her partner and her 8-year-old child are COVID positive. And Helen has still managed to remain negative
at the moment. Yeah.
Excellent.
We're isolated in different rooms and wearing masks when we like enter the public domain of the house. But it's very, I wouldn't say it's very hard because it sounds so privileged that at least that we still have a house that we can isolate in different areas.
Yeah, yeah. Not a lot of people have that.
Yeah, but at the moment we're coping. Yeah, I think my daughter's had enough of isolating in her home, in her own room, and
poor thing. Poor thing.
Yeah, it's saying that she's a poor thing is kind of like I don't know if it's an overstatement or an understatement because she spent like 8 hours of her time on iPad the first day.
That's fine.
I look at the time schedule of the on her iPad. I looked at the amount of time that she has spent on
iPad.
Helen, I just told her that
Helen almost had a heart attack.
I just told her that, oh, can you try to regulate your time other than just, you know, sit in front of the iPad. I know it is exhausting. I know it's, I don't know how to describe this, but I understand that it is very exhausting for the kids to stuck in the room
and don't have any interactions. I would go crazy. But especially an extroverted kid like your kid.
Yeah, that's really hard. Then again, she's got an iPad, so it's not like she has zero communications to the outside world or us.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, she's very privileged.
I don't know how I would have managed back in the 90s when I was eight years old.
Yeah, without internet. Yeah, well, you'll probably just be like reading
books.
I mean, she does a lot of reading as well.
Yeah.
And writing. She wrote a couple of letters to you. She just sent it out to you.
Yay, that's so great. I love her letters. She's a great letter writer.
She's very expressive. Yeah. Okay, let's get on to our cultural consumption of the week. Would you like to start first, Jess?
Yeah, sure. So we have almost finished the first season of The Returned, which is a Netflix. It's on Netflix. It's a Netflix series from France, so it's in French. It's from 2013, like I mentioned last week. And it's, I just wanted to say again how amazing it is because it's not like anything I've seen. It's very slow. It's very slow, so like it teaches you patience, and it kind of, because it's almost 10 years old, it like when we compare it to recent sort of series, it kind of is just very interesting to assess the way in which a series, I think it's 8-part series, 8 episodes per series, how different it tells a story Basically, it's like dead people coming back slowly into a small town somewhere in the middle of France. And it's just so evocative. It's very atmospheric. It's very haunting. There are some bits of violence, but like sort of short enough for me to just cover my eyes and get through it. But that would be my recommendation for this week. It's really haunting and kind of cozy for a winter. It's a really good winter watch. And again, my podcast recommendation this week would be The Pilot Club, which we'll come back to because it's in relation to another show Helen's going to talk about later. Helen, what about you?
So, regarding to Pilot Club, yes, I did watch. I started watching God's Favorite Idiot, which stars Melissa McCarthy and her partner, husband yeah.
Ben Falcone. Falcone. Yeah.
Falcone.
Okay.
Anyway, I've watched the first episode and I started without any knowledge
of what it was about.
Yeah. Realizing that it's like a 25-minute sitcom, which I don't think Melissa McCartney, she did an earlier sitcom when she first started her career.
Yeah, it was called Molly
career.
And Mike, or Mike and Molly.
Yeah, I didn't really... That didn't really get me, so
I never watched it.
But I really liked Melissa McCarthy's works in films, so I picked, probably just came into my Netflix algorithm anyway. I don't know how to feel about this.
Why are you conflicted?
I know it's funny, okay, because Melissa McCarthy is always like a big, funny woman trying to... like break the boundaries and very hardcore. Sometimes it's very hardcore verbal and physical violence in her films as well. But with this one, she's very direct. She plays a middle-aged office. It's almost like The Office.
Yeah, yeah.
The comedy The Office, but it's set in the kind of like in Billy's world, like post apocalypse. Kind of thin, and it's kind of confusing at the first because you don't know where the comedy is actually going or whether or not it's actually having a plot. You can see a little bit of romance in there. You can see a bit of office comedy in there, but apart from that you don't know where it's going because there's a character at the first in the first episode, spoiler alert, that you see the character that Ben Falcone plays gets struck by a lightning and then later on he glows whenever that he has a certain emotional expression that he glows, as in that his skin just literally has like lights coming out of his skin.
He illuminates.
Illuminates, exactly, yeah. So I don't know where the comedy is going, but... I think the Rotten Tomato hasn't given a very high score.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because I listened to Billy and Drew's take on it on the Pilot Club, and I think they liked it. You should listen to it because Billy.
I did. You did? I listened to it yesterday. Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to try and watch it, but I will definitely take in your consideration about your kind of ambivalence towards it. Was there anything identity politics wise that made you like not scream for joy about this show?
Well, there's side characters who are black, and there's New Zealand / Kiwi a Kiwi / Maori girl in the team of the environment of the office, but apart from that I don't see any Asians so far. But I think you get the personality of Melissa McCarthy from this comedy so far. Her directness, her bluntness, and the way that she verbally attacks people. Just the sharpness that she's got.
Great. She's so great. It kind of reminds me, I forgot to give also a recommendation to... a series that Ben and Billy and Drew talked about, which is The Summer I Turned Pretty, which I feel like Helen and I, we're definitely going to take a whole episode talking about, and stay tuned for that, because obviously it features a mixed race sort of, she was the Asian heroine. It's adapted from Jenny Han's books from about 10 years ago. She's obviously the person who wrote To All the Boys I've Ever Loved, and it's like we watched a pilot last week, the three of us. And
is it series? I thought it was a movie.
I know, I thought it was a movie too, but it's actually a series. and they're 45-minute long episodes, which to me is like, I wish they were shorter. I really like 25-minute or 30-minute episodes, really. That's the best kind of show. Yeah, no, I just have to say, I felt, at times I have to say, in the beginning I felt like it was a bit slow. I was a bit bored, but then it kind of picked up. It's very authentic. It's very true to kind of like the experience of being 15, 16 and like realizing that you have sexuality, that you have sexual desire, and also realizing that men or boys actually are looking at you differently. And it's really like beautiful and visceral and like quite lovely the way that they portray it. And the actors, I mean, I know on a lot of like Facebook groups, kind of Asian men are like, oh, it's another Asian woman, you know, prying for like the this love of two white guys.
White guys, yeah.
Eye roll kind of thing. And I get it, you know.
Yeah.
But
it's becoming like a very stereotypical trope
for
mixed Asian characters or even Asian women, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can see the generation coming through.
yeah, totally. Like when I was listening to the episode last night of the Pilot Club, when Billy said that it's interesting that it's taken more than 10 years for these books to be adapted onto screen. And he said it might be the reason. Remember, Helen, I don't know if you remember, he said it could be because back then no one would put money into a show that had an Asian female lead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I remember somewhere, reading somewhere, Jenny Hung was saying that to All the Boys That I Love,
when
it was first put into adaption, one of the producers was asking her to change
Laura the lead into a white woman.
Into a white woman instead of an Asian.
I remember that as well.
Yeah.
And she was just like, nah, I don't want that. And, you know, like now a new generation of women, Asian women can grow up with like, you know, just being able to see themselves being desired. Like, I don't care that they're being, like, yes, maybe it does matter the fact that the object of their desires is always a white male. But to me, that...
But it'll be a process.
That's another fight.
Yeah.
I just want to celebrate this one achievement. Seriously.
Yeah.
Okay. And speaking of Asian narratives, I'm also reading a book called The Stand-In, which I'm not sure is actually out. I've got an advanced copy, but I just want to talk about it now. It's okay. It's called The Stand-In. It's from an author called Lily Chu, who is from Canada. She lives in Toronto. It's basically a Chinese woman who grew up in Toronto, so she's like you and me. And then she's got a really awful boss who sexually harasses her, and her mum's got dementia in living home situation. And so she's stuck, and so one day she gets mistaken for a really, really famous Chinese actress from China. It's like a rom-com. It's a really great rom-com book, a chick lit. And so the book is about her being the double, the Chinese actress does double. And so she gets paid an exorbitant amount of money to be the double in like social events. So she doesn't actually do the acting. She just like goes to social events and pretends to be the actress. And it's a lot of fun. Like I never read any chick lit. And I never read any chick lit that centers on an Asian woman. And so I just fucking love it. It's so good.
Interesting.
It's a lot of fun to read. And I never read fun stuff, you know?
Never reading fun stuff. Yeah,
I always read for serious stuff.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I think we got an issue about, we find it hard to relax ourselves to read that kind of genres. Yeah. Yeah, speaking of not relaxing, I've watched a Netflix Indian film this week.
Good on you.
Nights.
That's great.
It was a recommendation from one of the forums among my friends, and I just thought that, okay, I never really watch anything from Bollywood, so
maybe neither.
I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
It's called Gambubai Kathiawadi. Apologies for my pronunciation. So it is a 2022 Indian Hindi language, almost like a biographical crime film, loosely based on the true story of Ganga Kathiawadi, who is popularly known as a social activist who started her life out as a prostitute. In the film, they call it prostitute, but now, you know, we call it
sex workers. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it was kind of a loosely adaptation from the book Mafia Queen of Mumbai, written by S. Hassan Zaldi. So the film depicts the rise in the of a simple girl who had no choice but embrace the way of destiny and swing it into her favor. So it's a relatively long film. It's a two-hour film where we see the girl who started out by the name of Ganga, and then she later changed to Gangubai. Mm-hmm. I am assuming, this is my linguistic analogy, is that she changed her name, the Bai, B-A-I, added to her name, is almost like changing your status from a girl into a woman, like a madam for mm-hmm. a brothel,
mm-hmm.
because it seems like there's other characters with Bai in the movie, mm-hmm. and the characters are all like the head of a brothel, like mm-hmm. the madam. You know, mm-hmm. in Japan, we call her mama-san. Taiwan, we call her mama-san as well. Yeah, so she was sold into a brothel by her then partner when she was like early 20s. She didn't know. She was thinking that she was going to make it big in Mumbai to become a movie star, but she was sadly sold into a brothel, and she made her way in that district, become like a head, the so-called president of that district, and trying to fight for the rights of all the sex workers. There are scenes that we see that she works with mafias in the district, trying to get her status up, but at the same time she knows that the right things to do,
mm-hmm.
to how to treat people with honesty and with mm. rights. Mm. It's a fun film to watch, but at the same time you feel it's I don't have anything, to be honest, I don't have anything negative about this film. I think it's a film that's probably just dragged a bit too long, but I really enjoyed watching the film because you see the dance and the music as well, hardly seen in the rest, the films like focusing on social issues.
Yeah.
And also all the actors and actresses are really good looking.
Really? Yeah, of course they are. I mean, yeah, they have to be, right?
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to say I don't think I want to admit this publicly. Let's just say I don't watch a lot of Bollywood films. Let's just say that. And I'm quite ashamed of that because it's so big, you know? It's so big. And I think it's
huge.
I think in the last Bollywood-esque film I watched was Bride and Prejudice, which I forget their names.
But even like, that... Even and it's, that not even like a,
it's not even a Bollywood film.
Yeah, it's a production with a British...
Yeah, it's like a white lens as well. Bollywood mm-hmm. film.
Yeah.
Mediated through whiteness, yeah. Shame on me.
I will highly recommend this one. If you have time to watch it. I mean, just watch it for the dance and the music will be nice too.
Yeah.
And the taking the words out of Billy's mouth... atmospheric the Indian Hindi culture surrounding the whole film. It's very beautiful. It's very vibrant.
Wow, lovely.
Set in the 1960s Mumbai, India.
Yeah.
So the production is done very, very well, I think.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
Very beautiful.
Is it a recent film, Helen?
Yeah, it just came out this year.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And you know how, I was just going to lastly mention, how you like to watch rom-coms. This has got... like this Hindi movies has a little bit of rom-com elements in it, and you'll watch how differently that they portray their affection compared to the standard Western films, is quite interesting. It's very elusive, as in you know how we see Western films, they're all very direct, as in
they all end up kissing
or you have sex immediately.
Duh.
But whereas Indian films, I can't touch say hands. If it's all the same. Touch hands, or they make certain gestures. Yeah, or they do a dance for each other.
Oh my god, that's so cute. That's very so cute.
Just a different way to express the love.
I love that. Speaking of India, would you ever go? Are you interested in going?
Yeah, I'm interested in going.
Me too.
Yeah. Wow. It's like one of those... we've been like the middle class white woman again, like going there for life changing experience.
Ashram, meditation, yoga retreat, you know, yeah. Totally. Well, that's all the recommendations I had this week. Helen?
Yeah, that's it from me as well.
Okay, let's take a break, and when we come back, Helen's going to take us through a topic today, this week, about acting your age. We'll be right back.
Okay, so we're back. Back in November 2020, we've already covered some discussions on ageism in Hollywood.
Mm.
And also we had an honor to speak to Yumi from Older Women's Network in the same month. So if you haven't listened to any of those episodes, we recommend you to go and listen and on some aspects of the ageism in our society. And as for this episode, we would like to extend the conversation with the launch of a campaign, which happened, I believe it was May this year, that has, it is called Act Your Age Campaign, otherwise known as ACYA.
Mm.
Yeah, so Jess, you cover some stories. You covered a story about this?
For Women's Agenda. Basically, it was over 100, like, actors from mostly from the UK who signed this pledge calling for more representation of older women across media. So it could be, you know, on TV, on film, it could be through the news networks, journalism, everything. And it's like a lot of men signed it as well, which is great. But it really calls to the need for and the lack of representation that older women feel that they just don't see themselves on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So according to the campaign, last year, BAFTA TV Award couldn't find a single woman over the age of 38 for the leading TV actress category. Despite the crucial and beautifully diverse lineup of actresses, all of them were under 38. And in the men's equivalent category, there were two men over the age of 45.
Yeah.
So that's the premises that we're covering of this campaign. And also there are some statistics shows that, what do I have here? You know, over the previous 21 years of the awards, the average age of nominees in the leading TV actress categories has fallen from the average of 52 to a shocking average of 32. So it's kind of like the society is almost worshipping the usefulness of female rather than, like, I don't know how they standardize on that, like the nominees, because you can't deny if a young person or a young actress is doing extremely well.
Yeah, that's true.
In their performance.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess it just speaks to the fact that they probably didn't have a lot to choose from, and therefore that there weren't many roles going to older women.
Yeah, and also the script. That's what you say, is that the campaign has been repeatedly told by the writers submitting many scripts and ideas from dramas, comedies and features. That age of the leading characters are routinely aged down by commissioners, producers and production companies, particularly the age of female romantic leading actresses.
Yeah.
So we're seeing, I guess they might have done a comparison of the rom-coms, and there are more rom-coms that involve with younger romance than the senior.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of, I just want to say, speaking of senior rom-coms, Helen, have you seen that movie with Emma Thompson and Dustin Hoffman? It's called Second Chance Harvey.
I've heard it, but I'm ashamed to say that I haven't.
Oh, no, don't be ashamed. It's like just another, you know, it's just another rom-com, but we watched it when we were on holidays last year in Wollongong. It was just showing on TV, and TV is such a novelty to us because we don't have it. And it's so sweet. It's just like two older people falling in love. It was I've cried so much. I was like tearing up so bad. It was so sweet. Aww. I really like comedies about older people falling in love. And also I think Emma Thompson's got a movie coming out where she's like
yes,
having sex with some young hot guy, a sex worker. I can't wait to see that.
So with the campaign, there's a quote that I actually, it's the fact, I think the quote just shows the reality, that it says that man has whole life whereas woman has a shelf life. You know, yeah. We don't see enough older women on screen, whereas many male actors can go well beyond their, I don't know, 60s, 70s, even 80s.
Yeah, and get good roles.
Yeah. And also, they said that excluding older women is enabled through the cloak of artistic choices. As in, almost that artists are... I don't know how to comment on this, but I do understand that a lot of artists and producers, that they need to consider the fact that whether or not something will sell.
Yeah, exactly.
The economic values of their work, and perhaps that the society are still very... in a sense that stigmatized, that, you know, popular genres are still produced for the younger people, and the younger people have the preferences of watching, you know, productions of younger artists, I guess. So the parity pledge, there's a the recommendation says that they want to ensure that there's a 50-50 age and gender parity of writers and performers of dramas and comedy in programming and commissioning. They want to ensure that there's a range of representations on age, as well as race and ethnicity, gender, LGBTQI+, disability, and also a 50-50 age parity of women over 45 in line with men, and younger women in political panels and discussions. Yeah, what do you think of that?
Yeah, it's great. Pledges are where it starts, right? And it highlights that there's an issue, and then hopefully more people, like, you know, us, we're talking about it, we can spread the word, get people thinking about it. At the end of the day, all of this, I think, no matter how seemingly small, contributes to changing things, I hope. I mean, at the end of the day, like, we just have to keep striving and pushing for what we want to see represented on the big screen.
Yeah. And also, in the extension, that I think that they need to also consider that there shouldn't be, even with having representation of older women on screen, they should try not to persist the stigmatization of the images of the mature woman. You know, the type of trope that we've seen for mature woman has always been like, she needs to be a mother or a grandmother.
Yeah, of course.
She needs to have kids.
Yeah.
And she's always like an angry woman.
I think this is why, like, Nomad, Frances McDormand. That's why I think her role was so revolutionary for so many people, and so so hard-hitting, because, you know, she didn't really fit into any of those tropes that we typically have in Hollywood for women of that age, you know, over 45, I guess. And this discussion reminds me, Helen, of, in the last week, I saw on the Facebook page Diversity in Australian Media. I'm not sure if you saw this, but there was like a great it was a great sort of post. Someone had taken an image of about 12 different magazines published in Australia.
Yeah.
The cover, just of the cover of the latest issues from 12 different magazines. And she said, she said, all, it's great to see age diversity, because, like, all of them were, like, you know, some of the magazines, like That's Life or, like, Reader's Digest, or I don't know, some, I don't remember them, but some of them have older women, like, you know, women in their 50s and 60s on the cover. And she's like, and the post said, it's great to have age diversity, but it's still super white.
Yeah, of course.
And I thought, Helen,
because of the readership.
Yeah, exactly. Think about that's it, what it's I thought. The readership, I thought, as no POC person I know reads any of those kind of magazines, because they're always written by white people for white people. And, like, I get it. Like, they won't they won't put a black woman on there when, like, they don't have one single black woman reader. You know, of course they're gonna. It all comes down to capitalism. You know what sells, and that's of course they're going to, you know, put on their cover an image that reflects their own readers.
Yeah. So this has also made me think about the launch of this campaign and the discussion around ageism, is because that we as a global society, we are moving into a aging population. So we are potentially seeing more older people than younger people, you know, less people are having kids.
You'll
have an aging population where it will become, I don't know if it is, or it would probably become like a predominant consumer of the world, you know, 45 and plus. That's why they're saying that, oh, we need to have more representations of older people on screen, and also having a maybe a different type of representation rather than a conservative trope that is depicted in most films and TVs. But speaking of that, I think coming back to Melissa McCarthy, I didn't know she's 51 this year.
I thought she was older than that.
Really?
My bad.
I always feel like she's always giving me like a very young person kind of vibe.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so we need to question the equality for the racial minority when we're seeing that this kind of campaign is probably going to only benefit for the white majorities. You know, are we going to, going to see white women who are over 45 that is going to be more represented on the screen, or are we going to see an overall of POCs, older POCs that are going to be represented? And I also can understand that. I don't know if we have enough supplies of older POC performers and artists out there. That's why I think it'd be great to encourage people who are considering to do side jobs, who are already establishing their own career path.
Yeah.
You know, moving into artistic industries.
I think there definitely are after their 40s, people out there. It's just like white people are blind to them and they don't give them the opportunity. The scarcity reason is all, for me, is always like completely invalid. It's just like, it's like when people are like, oh, we couldn't get any POC people on the panel because we couldn't find any. It's like, fuck you, you didn't try hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think it's always not, they're not trying hard enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they found that the POC, they feel like the POC are not up to their so-called standard.
Standard, yeah, because they fucking standard. Judge them. Yeah.
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 That's very sad.
Yeah. It pisses me off. It's,
speaking of the examples of scripts and movies and also TVs for on stories of older women, I can't help to mention this to Jess earlier this week about trying to convince her to watch Little Big Woman.
Oh, right.
The Taiwanese film, which I always think that it's such a crap translation. They could have just literally translated from their Chinese title.
Which is what?
Scent of Loneliness.
Oh, that's so much better.
Yeah,
what
I know.
The fuck?
Isn't it? It's just so, so strange.
Weird.
Yeah. So I think I mentioned it in 2020 again. Chen Shufang, which was the lead of that movie, who plays like a mother of four daughters and going through a funeral of her husband who has cheated on her decades before their separation. So it's a really good movie to watch, I think. Yeah. And can you believe it? There's actually a new TV drama coming out from a Chinese production called Ma Bie Nao Le. Like,
oh my God. Mom, stop nagging me.
Yes. Or Mom, stop messing around. Apparently, it's an adaptation of a semi-true story. I don't know if it's a true story, but it's from an internet, how would you call it? Like a journal? Like people write journals and their blogs. Or blogs. A woman who wrote about how her mom grieving through the passing of their father, the mom's husband, and then she started online dating in her 60s. And then she met someone online and she married an Australian guy and she's currently residing in Australia.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Or if the relationship is good, then yes.
I assume beautiful. The relationship, from what the daughter is saying, that the relationship so far, it seems good. And just the journey of her mum who doesn't speak a word of English.
Really? Okay, that even makes me more nervous.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. When is it? Have they started production? Is it coming out?
They started production. I think they finalized the whole film.
Wow, I can't wait to watch it.
I don't know if it's going to be on Australia's Netflix, but I'm hoping that it will be. It will be like a comedy. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Okay, so you were talking about Emma Thompson's latest movie.
Yeah.
So it's called Good Luck to You, Leo Grande. Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah, I have. Only like about 5 times. Emma Thompson is everywhere right now.
She is.
She's in Miss Trunchbull. in Matilda.
Yeah, Matilda the Matilda. Musical. Yes. Yeah,
her film adaptation. And, like, even before, because, like, the trailer kind of hides her face until the very end. Even before we see her face, I just friggin' knew it was Emma Thompson.
It's her voice.
Her voice, yeah.
It's her voice.
And a lot of people have been going on Facebook talking about how, like, fucked up it is that they're still getting thin actors to put on large suits for large people roles. Yeah. How, like, in this day and age, this is still happening is quite outrageous. But anyway, yeah, keep going.
I wonder if it's also an issue that when we say that we need someone who is over 45, like, for example, this AYAC campaign, we need someone who is 45, and they keep getting the same person.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Do you know what I was saying? When we say we're trying to have diversity, exactly, like to a conversation that we had earlier, they just get.
If any initiative or campaign is not intersectional, I'm not for it. That's just my bottom line. If you're not,
so they'll just get the same person.
Yeah, exactly. That
for everything
help. That doesn't change anything. You're just performing social justice. That's all. Yeah, it's just a performance. Yeah. It's not actually systemically changing anything.
Very true, yeah.
But continue, talk about Emma Thompson's latest movie.
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure when it's coming out, but both of us watched the trailer a couple of times where we see Emma Thompson plays
a woman in her 60s, I think.
60s, yeah.
So her husband has just passed, and she is, like, wanting to experiment, like, she wants to feel sexual. And she says to this, she hires this one really hot young guy. And I believe, just from the trailer, he's not white.
I think he's Latino.
Yeah, so they've another culture by hiring this, like, I don't know how they're going to do it.
Exotic. It's almost exoticized.
Yeah. The sexual figure exoticized. The Latino lover, you know. Mm. But she tells him in the trailer something like, oh, I've spent 50 years of my life when my husband would just, like, come home and, like, pounce on me and that was it and go to sleep.
Never experienced orgasm.
Yeah, she's never experienced an orgasm, which is not surprising. Like, I know a lot of women who have never done that. Oh, hi, Jake. Helen's best friend has just appeared on the screen licking her face. Jake, sit down. Helen, what are your thoughts? I mean, we should go watch it at the cinema when it comes out together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm not quite sure if it's a cinematic sort of experience type of movie for me, but I feel kind of conflicted when I see genres like this. It's
tell me why.
As if that I know there are other movies that depicts the intelligence of woman. I'm not saying that Emma Thompson is not intelligent. I'm not saying that this character is not intelligent, but almost as if that to me it's almost like a soft porn. You know,
right.
It's like we understand that older woman needs to explore their own sexualities as well, but you put it up there for Emma Thompson to play it. I don't know how to explain it. Yeah, I'm a bit conflicted. I mean, I will go and watch it for sure. Yeah, but I'm not sure about the script that is just from the trailer, what we see. I do hope that there are other stories happening in the film.
Yeah.
Because obviously, have sex. Yes, that's right.
I mean, obviously, because it's just like there's too many white films written by white people, acted by white people, where, like, basically their road or their journey into finding themselves, freeing up, being freed up is by a character who's not white. So, like, in my mind, it's like Bringing Down the House, where Queen Latifah is, like, the sassy black woman who, you know, opens up Steve Martin's life. Like, I can give you a gazillion different examples.
Yeah, a list of films, you know, side POC character.
Or, like, what's another one? It's like not Save the Last Dance, but the movie with Jennifer Lopez and Richard Gere and Susan Sarandon, where, like, Richard Gere, I haven't seen this, but from the trailer, it looks like Richard Gere is having marital problems, and then he goes to get dancing lessons, and Jennifer Lopez, sexy.
Dance?
Should we dance?
An adaptation from, like, a Japanese movie, wasn't it?
Oh, is it? Yeah. And there's, like, and then J-Lo is, like, the Latino who opens him up to, you know, his life, and he can go back to his wife all happy now. Like, people of colour have always been used as, like, props for white people to just discover themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know? It's gross. Yeah, that's so gross. Yeah. And I just fear that this new movie with Emma Thompson will do that. This guy that she, the sex worker she hires, clearly is not white. Like, clearly he is, like, the typical Latino lover.
I don't know what to say about that.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, let's, like, maybe talk about some good examples of, like, you know, older women representation. I've said Nomadland, you know,
Try to think. I don't have a list in front of me. But
I guess we should have done that before we started recording. Yeah. but you know, listeners.
I think any movies. Yeah, favorites. Any movies with Melissa
McCarthy. Oh, okay. Yeah. Have you seen my favorite Melissa McCarthy film? Is a film with her and Richard E. Grant. And the name of it just eludes me right now. But I'm going to try and look it up right now so that I can tell you. But it's a movie I saw with my favorite friend on the planet, Billy. We saw it at the cinemas, and it's got a very elusive, because it's called Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Oh, is it a drama or is it a comedy?
Yeah, it is. It's a drama.
Yeah, I think I've seen the trailer of that.
Beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. I'd say it's one of my favorite movies. It's so beautiful, and if Billy was here, he would just whiff off about it with me. I'm looking at the poster for it now, and I might actually buy it. The poster of the movie. It's so beautiful.
It's one of those very few movies that she is playing a serious
role. Yeah,
character, isn't it? Yeah.
So if you don't know, it's based on a true story of this woman, a writer, a songwriter, who's not getting any publishing done. Like, no one wants to publish her book, so she fakes writing. She poses as Dorothy Parker. Like, she makes up letters and then sells them and pretends to be Dorothy Parker. It's so beautiful. It's like one of the most stunning movies ever. Actually, I'm gonna see Helen. Which platform? It's on Disney Plus.
Oh, okay.
Which you have.
Yeah. So I you have should that. Watch, I can
it.
Watch it.
It's
yeah.
so beautiful. Oh my god.
I do think that she does very well in series roles. Yeah. I went to see The Kitchen before the pandemics. I enjoyed that as well.
Yeah.
Tiffany Haddish and Elizabeth Moss. Yeah, that was a really good film.
Yeah.
Where she played like a wife of a New York mob.
I've seen that. I liked it too. Yeah.
So Melissa McCarthy is the older woman of representation that we're talking about.
Yeah. Still a white woman.
Yeah, still a white woman, geez.
I think Octavia, Viola Davis is obviously another great one.
Yes.
Octavia Butler is a great one. So many.
I know without Jennifer Lopez.
Is she? Yeah, I guess.
She's white adjacent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, anything else?
No. I think I'd love to hear what the listeners think.
Yeah, let us know who's your favourite older, preferably POC woman or screen.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the end of our episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Google and Apple, and give us a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support us what we do here on Asian Bitches Down Under, head to our Buy Me Coffee page to make a donation for us to continue the intersectionality in the podcast industry. So we'll chat to you next week.
Yeah. Take care, guys.
Take care. Stay safe. Drink water.
Yep. Bye.